accession number 22079, reel 3.
Mr. Chamberlain, reel 3. How did you cope with conditions in the desert?
Well, flies. What a thing. Terrible. But,
In what way were they terrible?
You know, dinner or tea or whatever, flies or ear in your eyes and, terrible. We used to have fly traps. It was a big square thing like that, right, with wire netting on, not big enough for a fly to get out. And they used to go in this trap, flies. Loads of them. And then when they were moving, they'd get a shovel and shovelfuls of flies, you know, shovelfuls of them. Put some petrol on them and away, clean your trap and away until next call.
Did they give you any advice about how to cope with the flies, apart from the traps?
No, you don't. No advice, just to keep them away from you, and that same with mosquitoes as well. We had clothing for that. You had long sleeves on your shirt, and your KD trousers that turned down. You know, they would put in the button there and here, and fold it down.
That worked.
Took it in your socks.
What were the other problems in the desert?
Well, the water was, it wasn't such a big problem, because how many things it's all provided for. It makes you really wonder that thousands of German troops, thousands of Italian troops, and thousands of British troops, and they all get the water from wells. That's in a desert. Thousands.
Were you rationed about to how much water you could have in a
day? No, never really rationed, no. We used to have a little canvas bag, and we used to put it on under the wagon for it to get cool. And that was the water, but even so, it was terrible tasting water.
What did it taste like?
It was, when you put it in your tea, it was a curdle. When you put a drop of milk in your tea, tin milk, it was a curdle all in your tea. Terrible.
What about the food in the desert?
Oh, the food is all right, but then again, you had to go to the wagon, to the cookhouse wagon, come away with your dinner. Not with the sweet and you didn't know whatever. And you got plenty of it and all that. But when you went back to your tent or your bivouac and ate your dinner, by the time you come to eat your rice pudding, you cover with sand. Layers of sand on it. Mix it all up and then.
Was there any variety in the food? Was there any variety? What would be a daily diet?
Not a great deal.
So what would be a normal day in terms of food?
Well, it'd be bully beef. Sometimes they used to mix up in potatoes, bully beef and potatoes, and sometimes a slice of bully beef. But you couldn't slice it because when you opened a tin of bully, it was oil that came out, not fat. Like, well, opening it's fat, but there on the desert, it was oil. You used to get a tin to share between two and some potatoes. But cabbage, we weren't too bad at all. At least it didn't from me anyway, but I'm only a small eater.
Did you ever come across German rations? Did anybody sample any captured German or Italian rations?
No, not really. Only thing we saw in dugouts, I had bottles of Vintone. They were booby traps, you know. Get onto one of them and up you go. And they used to see them in a crate. Four bottles. Anyway, we learned not to touch them. That was it.
So you'd been warned about that?
Been warned about that, yeah. Yeah.
Now, in terms of how you as a unit coped with the desert conditions, was anybody affected by sunburn or were there any kind of illnesses within the unit?
One or two had to go down the line with sunburn, which they were told not to go bareback to anything they were told, but still you got on the walking about just the shorts on. But then they go down the line and probably you won't see them no more, go to another unit or something. Yeah.
Do any personalities stand out in the unit in the night? Do any personalities stand out You've mentioned Alfie Granger, and you've mentioned the Dr. Gottlieb. Anybody else?
And, well, our Sergeant Major, he come from Leeds.
Who was that?
Sergeant Major Rhodes. And he was a territorial before the war. And he used to be very good, really. And when I bumped into him in Leeds, I says, "Now the Sergeant Major." This is years after. He says, "Do I know you?" I says, "You ought to do." He says, it's Chamberlain, isn't it? I says, "Yes, that's right." And I says, "And you're Mr. Rhodes, how are you?" He says, "Yes, that's right." And anyway, he's died now. And he's a lot older than us.
What did he have to do with a Sergeant Major?
Oh, well, actually, he was an MSM. That's a mechanical Sergeant Major. And that's supposed to be higher than the RSM. But anyway, yeah, I got on well with him, really. I know when first time we met him, we're at Bradford. And I don't know what we'd done, but we got details for Cookhouse, four of us. And he come and joined us, same day as we were in Cookhouse. And he come into Cookhouse, he says, "Who are you?" I says, Chamberlain, sir. He said, "Get outside." I said, "I'm on Jankers." He said, "Never mind, Jankers, you're finished. Get outside on parade." And four of us had to go outside on parade. So that's our first dealings with affectionately known as Tommy Rhodes, Neil. But yes, he was all right.
Now, he was a Sergeant Major. When you're in the desert, what kind of standards of turnout, of dress and so on, what did you have to do on a daily basis? Did you have to shave?
No, there's nothing like that. You dress what you could. No inspections at all as such.
So that had all gone out the window?
You had to concentrate on the job in hand. But the one time we did get jankers, it went two of our lads. Been placed called Sweden, this is in Syria, and there was two officers, brigadiers or someone in red, you know. And our lads didn't salute him. Two of them didn't salute either of them. So they took the name and address, name and number, and it was our two lads in our gang, and we got full marching kit. Not football field, it's Sweden. Up and down, and they come on a horseback to see if we were doing it. After they used to go through, back here and see them next morning. Oh dear, they didn't now get, bless them two lads for not saluting.
So the rest of you took the blame for that?
Oh dear, I don't know. And Alfie's still with us.
So, there was no, in the desert, there was no insistence on turnout, but what about the vehicles? What were the things that you had to do to the vehicle in the desert? And what things would go wrong with the vehicles in the desert?
Well, as I said, they were pretty new vehicles when we got them. And they didn't seem to be bothered at all, but we had a breakdown truck and three mechanics. And they used to follow on. And anything matter with your truck or any condition. And they just go to them and come out and see it, or you'll take your vehicle to the workshop. I used to be fully prepared like that.
Did you have to move around a lot? Did you move around a lot?
Oh, aye. You won't have maybe a few days, or maybe if you're there weeks, it's unusual, really. The one particular time I thought it was a noisy engine. I looked in and fan had gone into the radiator, and it made a groove all the way around inside the radiator. So I told Leach, Corporal Leach, in charge of workshops, he says, "What do you mean it's gone into it?" I says, "Look, come on over and have a look." I says, "There." He says, "Oh, yes, I see what's my..." He says, "This mounting hasn't been put in properly." He says, "That's works for you." manufacturers. Anyway, he took it out and he mended it. All right. Yes, man.
So how long, you know, so you were a mobile unit, effectively.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
So how long would it take you to get all of your equipment
and
move from one location to another?
Well, yeah, one particular time I was a cookhouse wagon, and all the cookhouse stuff went on the back of my wagon, tins and all, blowers and all sorts, rations, and you have to load it up when you're on for the move. And you might only go maybe a couple of days away and unload again. Oh dear, but they were temporary rations. The one particular time when our officer, Captain Green, he says, there's no food for you. He said, I want you all to turn out from under your seats, all you can't stuff. And there were loads turned up. There were lads of tin fruit and tin milk and bully beef, all sorts under the seats. Loads of us like that. Anyway, we'd rations for a couple of days for you all units. Oh dear. So I think he just did it on purpose to get rid of it.
So was there a temptation when you were ferrying rations to maybe take
We once saw one particular time we could help ourselves at sugar. There were great big pile of sugar like that, and as long as from here to that tree, and about 6 foot wide, all sugar, it all burnt. It got hit with a bomb and it had all burnt outside, but the inside was all right. And you used to fill our dixies with sugar, because it was going to be wasted, you're going to leave it. So we helped ourselves at sugar. Idiot.
Were you ever subjected to air attack?
Oh, yes, we got strafed one thing or another. The one particular time was on the move and it stopped. I think we were going to have dinner or whatever, I don't know, just forget now. But anyway, there's high-tide planes coming over, strafing us. Anyway, our gunners, they shot one down, and it came down and bang, it went far from my wagon. It blew up. And carburetor, they told me, it landed at the back of my wagon. And I was underneath the wagon. I thought, it's a good job of that wagon here. Anyway, they just sunk into the sand. They come in the parachutes, coming down, but they went into the sand and they just buried themselves. And they didn't bother with them.
Was that the only time that you can remember being attacked?
And
was that the only attack, air attack?
Oh no, I got strafed, pretty often.
Could you describe any memories of that?
Well, it was just like, here it's coming and it's gone. Brrrr, and it's gone. And it wouldn't come back.
How were you trained to deal with that? How were you trained to deal with an air attack? Were you supposed to stay with the truck or did you leave the truck? What did you do?
You could do anything. You either get underneath the truck or run to a slit trench or anything.
What did most people do?
Get under the truck if it were strafing. Yeah.
Did you ever have to ferry ammunition?
No, we didn't do all that job at all. No, not at all, no.
Now, when you were... when you were dealing with the wounded from the tanks and so on, about how far would you have to take the wounded? You know, you would go up to the front. You'd go up to the front line where the wounded were. How far back would it be?
Not so very far. Really,
so about how far?
See, you never knew where they were going to be attacked. You know, tanks. Well, they used to move up nearer as we could, or near as we dare, and. Make tents, like put tents up here for wounded, and then go maybe 2 or 3 miles up to the tanks and go and see what wounded there were.
Would you be briefed before a battle? Would you have a sense that there was?
I think there would be the brief. You're ready to expect something.
So you were setting the.
And we were just waiting for them, but these medical go, lads, it's all right. But I'm going to do some work. Pulling men out of the yard, tanks that had been blown up, and these lads are trapped, absolutely trapped in an oven. Oh, it's a job with them.
Was there any examples of people going so-called bomb happy within the unit? You know, with just
no, no. I have seen it by checking away that I can't keep still, but not in our unit. We didn't get on it, and we only saw maybe wounded and I think passing down the line. That's all you would see.
So you were effectively kind of in action from kind of early 41, from that period.
Pardon?
You were effectively in the desert from early 1941.
Yeah, 41.
Now you've mentioned going up into Syria.
Yes, I was up in Syria. This is when we come down for a while, but we went back up again. But
was this after the battle, the war in Syria? You weren't involved in any conflict?
When there's a lull, we used to go a bit further down the line. Well, this particular time, our unit, it went up into Syria. But there was no fighting.
So it was a rest?
But that's right.
It was after the actual invasion?
That's right, yeah. Then we came back through Israel, Palestine, and then back up onto the desert.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any memories of the other Allied units that were in the desert? You know, people like the South Africans, the Australians, the New Zealanders. Did you have any contact with...
Oh, we saw the Aussies.
What did you think of them?
And we saw them all, New Zealanders and Indians. Oh, they all just were a bit rough, right? But you know, we used to play cricket when we were at Mafraq. We played them at cricket and the proper mats, you know, all laid out sand, proper cricket guns, proper cricket bats and everything. Ours is. But they'd have a game of cricket, and of course, when they played us, you know, right do.
So who won?
But the one particular, ooh, we're a big fella, so one on like this, cricket bat, ooh.
So who won the game?
They were all right.
Who won the game? Who won?
I don't know. I think it just fell apart, and of course the Aussies were famous for the drinks. They like a drink of beer, but I'm afraid there's nothing on there up there to get excited about.
What about the South Africans and the New Zealanders?
South Africans seemed to quiet a lot at New Zealanders.
You mentioned you had a Czechoslovakian doctor. You mentioned Gottlieb, the Czechoslovakian doctor.
He was a captain at Czechoslovakia.
Can you remember anything more about him? How he actually got into your...
I didn't know much about him, really. He joined us in Palestine. He joined us there.
Do any of the other medical staff stand out? Do any of the other medical staff stand out?
He was an MO, was that Gottlieb, yeah.
But do any of the other medical people stand out in terms of... You know?
Doctor MOs? Well, there's quite a few. There's one, there's a padre. Yeah, padre Thompson. Anyway, that's a bit later on when we're in prison camp. But normally we got on all right, you know, really, with them. With all nationalities, the Indians are all right because they used to make chapatis, you know, little round things, and they used to invite us to their tent for a chapati, George. Yes, oh well, they used to down tools and away for the chapati.
why did they use this term, George? What was that for?
I don't know. They called it. We seemed to get a name of George.
So every British soldier was called George.
Yes, he was called George. Yeah.
Now, when you were involved in the action, you wouldn't have any. The doctors wouldn't be up with you, you know.
No,
they'd be further back.
One or two used to venture up, you know. Yeah. Oh yes, but normally they're further back at ambulance station.
Were you ever shelled? Were you ever shelled when you were picking up casualties? Were you ever shelled? Directly shelled?
No, well, I've been amongst the shelling and the bombing, but was fortunate enough to avoid them.
Can you remember your first experience of that? Your first experience of being shelled?
Yes, well, shelled all 4 hour captured. But one particular time, we're in Benghazi, but not in prison camp, not in...
This is Benghazi when you were still in the British.
We went up to Benghazi, and we got air raids. Bang, the one lad, he went lying there, down there, and they shot his elbow clean off it. He lost his arm anyway, and that was in Benghazi. And
can you remember who that was?
Pardon?
Can you remember who that was?
Oh, I forgot his name. And there's another one, I know his name, Tilly, they called him. He got wounded in his stomach as well. And he went to hospital in Benghazi. But what happened to him, I don't know. We had to move on. And what happened to him, I don't know. And he come from Brislington in Bristol. I'm thinking of these names and I'm talking every day to him. Yeah.
So, in terms of shell fire, how did you? In terms of this incident with the shell fire.
When you're in shell fire.
Yeah, you mentioned this man losing his arm.
Yes, it dropped. It was a bomb, was that? And it dropped on a solid rock. Ooh, and it just splintered all over the place. And what they call him now? Futcher, I think they call Futcher. I think they called him, and he got his elbow taken off. But you've got to get your head down and all right about it.
Did you, was there the mail service between the front line and home? Were you able to keep in touch with your family back in England?
Well, you used to write letters, but you never used to write so much, really, because you'd know how you're up there for weeks and weeks, there's no post.
What about mail from home and parcels and so on?
Well, you used to get that all in a bulk. You might get half a dozen letters had been posted at different times, but you might get them all together. Yeah.
And in terms of the radio, were you able to keep up with the news? Was there any?
No, not really. But in prison camps, some of the lads made one out of bits and pieces. How they got it? They used to get news about BBC at 6 o'clock.
And, so that's like later, but at this stage, you're in the desert. You were fighting in the desert war.
Yeah.
Did you actually know what was going on, like the larger picture of?
Not really. You can just hear it, but what was going on? I remember one time when we were at what they call that place, that Knightsbridge. I don't know where you heard of it. It's just outside Tobruk, and we were in there at Knightsbridge, and we got in shelled. And we had to fall back till eventually we were in Tobruk, and we got shelled there. That's where Germans got me, and Alfie. Well, I've got thousands of us. Yes, my word.
So, how did you think the war was going in the desert? You'd been there from 1941. Were you? What was morale like?
Well, you didn't get a full account of how things were happening, but you used to get bits of information from newcomers, somebody sent to be stationed with us, and they used to give you latest grief, but you weren't up to date with it. Only on what you heard officers were up to tell you.
And what was your morale like?
Oh, pretty good. Where we were pretty good.
Now, apparently, the Germans got involved in the Desert War, and General Rommel.
Yeah.
Was that a name that you were familiar with at the time?
Oh, yes, we heard of his name, Rommel, yeah.
And what did you think of him?
He's a good desert fighter, no doubt about it.
So he's respected?
Definitely, yeah.
What about the British generals?
Well, they were all right. It was Auchinleck. About my time, he was in charge then, Field Marshal Auchinleck. And because I was captured then when Monty came, when Monty took over,
You'd already been taken prisoner at this
time? I was already a prisoner then. Yeah.
So did people talk about, you know, the strategy of what was going on? I mean, did people have their own ideas about?
Oh, we used to have a talk, you know, our own ideas and say, well, this so and so and so and so, you know, and some were agree with it and others would start arguing about it, you know. No, they don't know that. Fancy now that Germans are in Greece or something like that now. Well, I know. No, yeah. But there was all little debates like that amongst yourself.
Now, while you're out there, what do you think the British might have been doing wrong in the desert? What do you think?
What they're doing wrong?
Yeah, what do you think could have been improved? Yeah. Or when you're having these debates with each other?
Well, you used to, under your breath, you say, oh, it's a bit useless and all that carry on. But we didn't really condemn it that much, really.
So what do you think was useless? What things do you think that... What did you think was useless when you were saying...
I'm not with you again.
When you said, oh, it was useless, what would people be criticising?
Oh, well, there might have been a slip-up, you know, and it might have got loads of prisoners caught. And the same as our general, I suppose, he'd get caught, because about 20-some thousand went to prisoners at Tobruk, something like that. So he wouldn't get such a very good name, would he? And that's how it went on.
Were there any items of equipment that you thought weren't up to scratch?
Oh, there seemed to be plenty of equipment. Mm. Why?
Was there anything on the German side that people envied?
I used to see plenty of German equipment smashed up.
Yes, but was there any of that that you thought maybe we should have had some of that? That any kind of...
Yeah, I'm not with you again, sorry.
Right, Mr. Chamberlain, what I was really asking about there was other veterans had talked about the jerry can and how much they were impressed with that. And off the tape, you've mentioned something about what you do with the British petrol tins. Could you just describe that?
We preferred them if we could get hold of them. We preferred the jerry cans to ours. I mean, ours was just thrown away.
And you mentioned you were mate.
But if you got hold of a jerry can, you kept hold of it.
And you mentioned that you would use the British tins, you'd fill them with sand. Could you just describe that? The British tins, how you'd fill them with sand.
Oh, yes. We used to cut the side, fill it full of sand, pull the lid down, and make it like a brick wall, like a building out around you. And you used to see them in the desert when you're going travelling through over there. They've made a little slit trench and dugouts and all sorts of tins. Yeah.
Now you were in action for over a year, you know, between coming, between embarking from England and being captured at Tobruk.
Mm-hmm.
How would the unit as a whole cope with that? I mean, were you the same unit when you were captured, or had there been a lot of changes, or was it mainly just this?
No, it was the same unit when we was captured. Yes, all along. But we never saw any. The medical corps, they seemed to get away. And a lot of our officers got away, but quite a few lads were, such as Alfie and myself, and a few more were caught. But the biggest part of them, they got away.